Yes, we missed it last week, but we've got the team here today and we're
indeed
all raring to go. Good morning, afternoon.
Afternoon.
Cheryl and Dr. Fiona.
How are you, Amanda?
Good, thank you. Now, Cheryl, I've been looking at your pin and you've got a little mouse or rat on it.
I have, and I thought today I'd just mention about leptospirosis, and it's time that everybody who hasn't had their dog immunised needs to go and do that. So we'll have a chat about the problems with leptospirosis.
And I guess you'll tell us what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and if anyone's got any questions with regards to, yeah, lepto vaccines or anything else, give us a call.
This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we have Beck from Paterson on the line. Hi, Beck. How can we help?
We have a 10-month-old Maine Coon kitten.
Yes.
And we're just wondering, at what age do we start to transition him through to adult food? Of course, it's very hard to get a variety of kitten foods for him.
Yeah, okay, sure, Beck. So historically, the answer to your question is around 12 months of age, we switch them to adult food. Having said that, Maine Coons are a larger breed of cat. So
yes,
potentially I would be happy to have him on kitten food if you want till around 18 months to 2 years. Now, the basis for that information is around their growth plates and when your growth plates have grown and your bones have finished growing. If you're struggling to get him to eat kitten food, I think once he gets to 12 months, you could quite happily go 50-50 adult kitten food, that sort of thing, if you're wanting to give him more options for food.
Yeah, excellent.
Is he fussy with the kitten food or?
I believe he is, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I'd definitely keep him on kitten food till 12 months.
Yep.
Being a larger breed cat, you could quite easily keep him on kitten food for 18 months to 2 years. But if you wanted to switch, you could start doing that at 12 months of age.
And does it have to be like proper kitten food, or could we even transition him to like just chicken, beef, stuff like that, that we make ourselves? Or does it have to be proper kitten food?
It doesn't have to be kitten food. However, I would suggest from a nutritionally balanced point of view, your dry food has everything in it that he needs. Okay.
Yep.
If you want to give him a special treat once in a while, give him some fresh meat, that's absolutely fine. But I wouldn't be relying on that from a nutritional point of view.
Excellent. No, that's great.
Fantastic. Thanks for the call, Beck.
Thanks so much.
Thanks very much. If you've got a pet-related question, you can give us a call on 49216 216 on 2NURFM. And right now we're going to talk about
leptospirosis.
Yeah, so can you tell us what that is for those people that don't know?
I'll let Fiona do that bit.
So leptospirosis is a bacterial disease that is shed in the main route of transmission is it's shed in the urine of rats, okay? And then the reason it becomes a problem for our dog population is because, as you can imagine, with the amount of stagnant water around Newcastle at the moment, if a rat's been passing through and it's urinated in that puddle of water, the dog goes to drink out of the puddle of water, and then they ingest the bacteria, and it can very quickly become fatal. So it can kill them because it causes very significant kidney disease.
Yeah.
Two of the reasons it's gained so much traction and media attention lately is, step one, it can be fatal for our pets, but step two, people can get leptospirosis as well. So the fact that we can vaccinate it against it is really important and definitely something that we should be doing.
Yeah, and one of those things too, there's a few different strains, and now that they've got a new vaccine for this too, haven't they, Fiona? So what's the story with that?
So historically, we've had a vaccination for leptospirosis for a large number of years, but it's only protected against one strain of lepto. But we're really lucky in the last 12 months, we now have a vaccine that protects against two strains of leptospirosis. Now, there are multiple strains of leptospirosis, but with those two strains, we also get a level of cross-protection for any of the other lepto strains. So the new vaccine is definitely provides superior protection for our pets, for our dogs.
And so when you go to the vet, this will be two times. You have one injection, then go back again 2 weeks to a month later for the second one. So
correct.
This is really important for people to understand as well, that it's not just a one-off. You've got to go back and have that second injection to have full coverage.
Absolutely. Think of it like when your kids get vaccines when they're really little. You have to do the booster so that your immune system has the memory to then provide that effective protection.
Yeah.
So having that boost is really important, as you said.
Yeah, and the thing is too, the rain events that we've been having are really significant as to why this is a problem for us. Because Leptospira can actually live in soil for months, and when we have the rain come along and wet it and it runs off, and then we have dogs go to the park or in their backyard where there's lots of puddles, they drink from those puddles, they wade in it, they swim in the larger puddles. This is where that contact comes in, and so this is where we've got to be really concerned about our dogs when there's these volumes of water around. So when they're at the park, don't let them drink, don't let them go in it, you know, try to go somewhere where there's no water, because that rat urine can be around.
Okay, good to know. We've got a couple of calls on the line. Ari from Merriweather. Hi, Ari. How can we help you?
Oh, g'day. It's Ollie, actually.
Oh, spelt wrong. There we go.
How can we help, Ollie?
I've got a little cattle dog pup. She's a little female cattle dog pup, and she's a beautiful dog. She's best natured dog at home. She comes up with her cuddles and everything, but she gets near another dog and she wants to kill.
Yeah. How old is she, Ollie?
She's about 11 months now, nearly 11 months.
Okay. And is this a new thing that's developing, or it's sort of slowly getting worse, or how would you describe the progression of it?
Slowly getting worse. When she was a little pup, she used to run up to the dogs and bite them on the heels and like they were a big cow.
Yes. Genetics are hard to fight there, Ollie.
Yeah, that's right. But now, oh, my God, like, is that the stage where I don't want to take her down the park if there's other dogs there?
Yeah, okay. All right. So I guess first things first, genetics are hard to beat. You know, if you think about what her historical genetics are for, they're for chasing and biting and herding and barking and protecting and all those things. So in her mind, she's doing all those things. But it's just that in her current situation, that's an inappropriate thing to do. Okay.
That's right.
I would strongly, strongly recommend you seek behaviour help. Whether that's from a dog trainer that you can work with, whether that's from your local vet, but I would definitely recommend speaking to your vet, even if it's a call up to reception to speak to one of the nurses. Have you got any dog trainers that you recommend? Okay, I wouldn't just go eeny, meeny, miny, mo in the online, because not every dog trainer is the same. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
There is more than likely a bit of time and effort that you're going to have to put in, Ollie, to do this retraining of her, okay?
Yep.
Now,
yep.
She's young. She's super smart, like as a breed, very, very intelligent. So she can relearn what we expect of her, but it is going to be a journey, I would say, Ollie.
Yeah, yeah. I currently take her to dog training.
Excellent.
And it's food motivated. And when I get her attention, she's good around the other dogs. Like, she ignores them, but when I take her for a walk down the beach or whatever, or towards the beach, I walk into dog training or drive in, she sees the other dogs, or even sees a dog on the TV, she went, oh my God.
Yeah.
She arcs right up.
And look, the fact that you're doing dog training is really positive, okay, because you've got that relationship with her, you know what works for her, but it might just be we need to amp up the level of training, potentially need some medication if required. I'd be seeking some further professional help if I were you, Ollie, to give yourself the best chance of at least a decade of companionship with her.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's right.
Thanks for your call, Ollie. Good luck with it.
All right. No, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ollie.
Thank you. Okay, next on the line we have Anne from Raymond Terrace. Hi, Anne. How can we help you?
Hi, how are you? I've got actually two questions, if you don't mind me asking.
Sure.
I have a 18-month-old British Bulldog cross French Mastiff that just won't stop chewing anything. She's already eaten half our, all our wicker chairs outside.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, lots at cause here. She's spoiled. She's got every toy you can think of. I buy her all the, and that's the other one I'm going to talk about. I buy her all toys to distract her and that, but when it comes to nighttime, that's it. She just starts chewing everything.
Okay, so is she doing it when she's away from you, Anne? As in, like, does she do it because she's lonely or stressed or wants to be with
you? She's got two other brothers. I've got three dogs.
So she's not lonely. I don't know why she does it. Where her cage is, she's got a cage and she goes in there. She
sleeps
in it. Charlie, please. She's got a cage. She goes in there. It's just that I don't know.
Is it mainly at night that she's chewing things?
No.
All the time?
Whatever, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And are there particular things that she likes to chew, Anne?
Yeah, wicker chairs.
Okay. May I suggest the easiest thing to do is remove the wicker chairs, because for her that is a giant chew toy. It's potentially just too delicious and too exciting, and that may well be, whilst it might not be convenient for you, if you would like to keep the remaining chairs, it may be the best thing moving forward. Does she have lots of other chewy things available to her?
Yeah, she's got all those expensive croc toys that basically indestructible. But, she's already chewed part of our leather lounge. So is my other dog, who also chewed part of the leather lounge. She just chews anything. Any furniture-wise, she's going to chew.
Yeah, all right. Look, it may not be something I can fix for you, Anne, within a couple of minutes on the phone. Now, tell me about your second problem, and then I'll see if I can summarise for you.
Charlie is a four-year-old miniature Jack Russell, absolutely beautiful, but an absolutely nervous Nelly.
Okay. Yeah, tell me more.
He has attitude problems when I leave. He starts to cry, carries on. He wheezes inside now. We don't know what's causing this problem now.
Okay. And how old did you say he was? Sorry, Anne.
Charlie will be now 4 years old.
Okay. And when did this behaviour start?
Probably about a couple of months just before we got the other dog, but it's just got worse with Biscuit.
Yeah, okay. All right. Look, I strongly feel that both the situations you have, Anne, are behavioural issues, okay?
Yep.
So what I think both are fairly significant, and both are going to need a bit of time and effort and retraining on your behalf. So
yep.
As I actually discussed with Ollie, who was our caller previously, I really do recommend that you get a dog trainer to come out to the house, because I think they're going to need to be seeing these things in action, and then they can give you some really helpful tips and tricks.
I was actually thinking about going to the pet shops and buying calming sprays or oils. You don't recommend them?
Oh, look, absolutely, Anne. They may be helpful, but they may be like 5 to 10% helpful, and you need something that's like 60 to 70% helpful.
So I'm
absolutely supportive of them, and they're not going to do any harm, but I think in your particular situation they probably won't be enough.
Okay, thanks for your call, Anne, and good luck with that.
Yeah, best of luck.
Hi, Karen, thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Hello. Just bringing up about two boy guinea pigs that I have.
Yeah.
They're just about a year old now.
Okay.
I'm just trying to work out, like, how much veg to give them, like vegetables, because, like, they say, like, a cupful, but like a cup of celery or spinach or whatever is a big difference.
Are you feeding them pellets as well or something?
Yes, pellets and hay as well.
Excellent, good. Excellent. That's really important.
Yep, they've always got fresh hay, and they're always popcorn around the place, pulling around. Like, and I'm also trying to get some vitamin C into them.
Yeah, that's really important for guinea pigs. Look, I think anything you can give them in addition with, you know, your leafy greens, really good. I think from memory, lettuce is not one of those things, Karen, that's a good one. Yep. You can find some good resources online about appropriate greens to give them.
It's just like it's the good lettuce, not the iceberg.
Yeah.
Romanian and
Yeah, just double check would be my suggestion. Karen, have you got anything to add there, Cheryl? Yeah.
Another thing that they do like, Karen, is parsley, which is high vitamin C as well. So if you want to put, get some parsley, even if you're growing your own parsley, it's a really great way to be able to go and collect that each day and give them. So that would be a suggestion that I would be putting in some parsley into those greens as well. But your things like spinach and stuff, they usually really like those, and you can grow those at home in pots, which means that you've ideally got it all of the time just to go and collect for your guinea pigs.
Yeah. Well, I've been giving them spinach and I buy them pre-made salads.
Yeah, okay.
That have got all like the little greens in them, like rocket and baby spinach and all that stuff.
Our guinea pigs used to love that sort of thing, Karen. And the other suggestion I'd have is if you're making a salad or something for dinner, keep the offcuts. And then that's sort of a more cost-effective way you can give them some really good salads as well.
Yeah, because what I've been doing, because they don't like oranges and that, so I've been like just cutting an orange open and squeezing it over the greens that I give them.
Oh, for your vitamin C?
Yeah.
Yeah, look, capsicums are really another really good one that's really, really high in vitamin C, just in case they're not liking that citrus, which could be the case.
Yeah, well, I've just actually bought some yellow peppers today for them.
Excellent. That'd be perfect.
And they actually liked it.
Fantastic.
I bought the red one, the green one they didn't like, but the yellow one, they've actually chewed a bit of it.
Fantastic. Best of luck with that, Karen.
Thank you very much for your call, Karen. Appreciate it. Next on the line, we have another Karen from Taralba. Hi, Karen. You've got a problem with your Jack Russell.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I recently, just a few days ago, adopted his a Jack Russell Foxy cross.
Yeah.
He was picked up and was in the pound and then went to a rescue organisation and I just adopted him. Now, he's only just been de-sexed. He's 5 years old.
Okay.
The problem I'm having is that I don't know if he's been house trained because he's pooing and pooing in the house.
Okay.
And I'm on my bedroom carpet. No matter if I put him out, he's got a doggy door that I've left the flap open. He knows how to get out and in, but he just doesn't seem to.
Yeah.
He prefers to wee inside and poo inside.
Well, look, Karen, hats off to you for seeking advice early in the piece because, neither you nor I, nor probably him for that matter, want this to become a regular occurrence. I'm not sure if you've had kids, Karen, or if you've toilet trained your kids, but basically you're toilet training your Jack Russell. So you need to limit the access within the house to a space that makes it easier for you to watch him, okay? You literally have to watch him like a hawk, okay?
Yeah.
And then whether it's every hour or depending on how often he tends to urinate, let's say every hour you take him outside on the lead would be my suggestion to the same sort of spot. And you're basically waiting in for him to wee. If he does urinate, you can then match it with a word. Like my dogs, for example, wee-wees is what I say when I want them to toilet. Now it's going to take a while to create that link, okay?
Yeah.
But the idea is you're providing him with an opportunity to do the right thing, okay? Mm-hmm. And then when you come back, if he has toileted outside, you probably got a bit of leeway and a bit of breathing space before you'd expect him to go again. But you basically have to watch him like a hawk when he's inside because you'll realise he's giving you signs when he needs to wee, okay?
Yeah.
Whether it's sniffing around, whether it's walking around in a circle, whether it's, sniff, 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 particularly the male dog, up against a piece of furniture or up against the wall. You want to be catching it and providing him with the opportunity to do the right thing.
Do it outside,
Yeah. Any additions there, Cheryl?
Yeah, Karen, one of the things that I would do is make sure that where he has urinated inside that you get an enzymatic cleaner and clean that up because otherwise if you don't and encapsulate that odour from the ammonia of his urine, he's going to continue to go around that space every time he smells it. So definitely, pop down to your vet and grab some of that. And the fact that he's just come to you as well, he really won't understand where to go. So Dr. Fiona's advice on taking him on a leash to that same space outside and getting him to toilet will train him for where you want him to go. And, little Jack Russells are smart. They learn quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks
Best
very
of
much
luck.
For your call, Karen. Appreciate it. Good
Thanks.
Luck. Thanks. Bye. Next, we have Joanne from Mount View on the line. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Hi, how are you? I have a little staffy, and on the bottom, so his eyelid, his bottom eyelid,
yes,
he has like a little growth, okay. A little black growth. He's had it for a little while. It doesn't seem to affect him in any way.
Okay.
Basically, should I have it removed or leave it because it's so close to the eye?
Sure. I'll ask you a couple of questions, Joanne. So how old is he?
He's 8.
And how many years would you say the lump's been there?
Oh, probably maybe up to 2.
Okay. And can you tell by looking at the eye, does he squint or blink a bit more, or does he have more tears that overflow in that eye?
No, he bungs them on when he wants.
And how long would you say the lump, how big would you say the lump is now?
Probably about the size of a pea.
Okay, all right. And has
it's
that
gotten a little bit bigger?
Okay.
Which made it drop down. So his vision's fine. He plays fine. Everything, he's healthy. He's.
Is it the bottom eyelid? It's the bottom eyelid you said, didn't you?
Yeah, so it's probably now the size of, you know, the brown in his eye. It's probably about half the size width of it.
Okay, all right. So my suggestion with eyelid lumps, Joanne, regardless really of where they are on the eye, is if they start to grow, then to get them surgically removed. Okay.
Okay.
And one of the reasons, well, two reasons mainly. The first one is if they do rub the cornea, which is the surface of the eye, they can create an ulcer, which then becomes a real headache to clear. And can be almost impossible to clear without surgically removing.
Yes,
the second reason I recommend removal is the eyelid. We have a very limited amount of skin to work with surgery. Once you start getting close to a third of the diameter of the eyelid or even a quarter of the diameter of the eyelid, it gets very, very tricky to surgically remove, and we end up having to do more complicated procedures, which in turn become more expensive for the owner.
Yeah,
so
fair
it
enough.
It's much better for him and much better for you to remove it before it becomes one of these large lumps that now, can be a problem. So you're better off preventing that situation would be definitely be my suggestion.
Yeah, because it doesn't look to have grown on where it's attached, but further, like at the end of it. And only just started in the last, say, month or so.
Okay. Has he had a vet? Has the vet checked it at all, Joanne, recently?
Well, this is funny. So he's my son's dog, but he now lives with me.
Okay.
His ex-partner is a vet, and he had it whilst with her.
Yeah.
And he would go to work, like, with the vet. So, yes, a vet has seen it and didn't, but it has started to grow at the bottom, which is more my concern now.
Yeah. Look, my recommendation, Joanne, definitely is to get it checked, okay? If it's changed since the last vet looked at it, it's possible what we needed to do then is very different to what we need to do now.
Good luck with that, Joanne. All the best. Hopefully there's no issues. Next on the line, we have Roslyn from Karua. Hi, Roslyn. Thanks for holding.
Hi. My cat was diagnosed with crystals in his urine a while ago now, probably about 3 or 4 months ago now. And the vet put him on the Hills urinary tract infection type diet.
Yes, excellent.
And he's been fantastic.
Excellent.
Ever since then. But what I wanted to ask you, what I've often wondered, is the Hills urinary tract food, is that a preventative, or is it that the other food that he was on had something in it that was causing it? I just wondered about how it actually works.
Yeah, sure. Great questions, Roslyn. So just to clarify, you have a male cat?
Yep. And I've been told male cats get this much more than female
correct,
cats.
Correct. Right? Yeah, so more than likely the crystals were what we call struvite crystals, which are much more common in male cats. more common in elderly, overweight male cats. I'm not sure if how many boxes your cat ticks in that situation, Roslyn.
He's not old. He's solid. He's not fat, but he's fairly solid. He's a
big boy.
Cat,
yeah. Okay. So the most important thing for you to understand, Roslyn, this is a lifelong condition. Okay.
Yes.
So he's going to need to be on this special food for life. So in answer to your question, his previous food hasn't caused it. There's nothing you've done wrong.
Well,
there's nothing
it wasn't that. I just wondered how it all worked, you know. Yeah.
It's to do with the pH of the urine. So if the pH is alkaline, these struvite crystals are more likely to form. Okay. So one of the important things that the diet does is make the urine more acidic, which makes the crystals unable to form.
Okay.
What we worry about with males and these crystals is if there's enough crystals, they then get stones, bladder stones, and that can become a real nightmare and a real emergency. So definitely keeping him on the diet long term will manage the crystals and hopefully decrease his risk of stones.
Yeah, okay.
Does that answer your question, Roslyn?
Yeah, it does. And also I was wondering, there's only the two choices in it, salmon and chicken. I was wondering, do you think it would hurt him if I gave him another packet just very occasionally, sort of as a treat, or not take that risk? What do you think?
Sure. Technically, the answer is no. Okay.
No, okay.
Because this urine pH that you're trying really hard and spending lots of money on this food, you are negating its effect by feeding him something different. Okay. Technically, occasionally, a little bit of something is not going to be causing a problem. Okay. But in principle, according to the food reps, you should not feed anything else. But look, you know, I don't mind, you know, a bowl of ice cream every now and then. And I think
maybe every now and then.
But just small and not frequently.
Thanks very much, Roslyn.
Wondering about. Thank you.
Yeah,
no worries. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we have got Bob from Marks Point on the line. Hi, Bob. How can we help you?
Oh, hi, Fiona. Thanks for taking my call.
No worries, Bob.
I'm inquiring about getting a companion cat.
Excellent.
Or kitten.
Yes.
My problem is I spend the vast majority of my time, sleep most of the time as well, on my boat.
Okay.
Now, I'm looking for a cat that... My primary worry is that if I was to get an older cat, it would be already set in its ways and possibly hate water.
Yeah, okay.
And that would be a disaster.
Yes. I was actually, we were discussing, Bob, your situation, Cheryl and I, just a minute ago, and probably the best thing I can think of to summarise, Bob, is a kitten or an older cat could probably be both the best and the worst choice. Depending on how you look at it, I'm just thinking, I guess the benefit potentially if you get an older cat is liaising with one of the rescue associations and telling them what you're after.
I'm in the process of that right now.
Excellent, because they may well come across a cat that would fit perfectly, okay? I guess the benefit of a kitten is you can teach them things and they can get used to your particular scenario. I guess, is there a backup plan, Bob? Like if they don't like the boat, do you also live in a house or is there anyone else at home or anything like that?
Well, I do spend some time in my house through the week. I don't sleep in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have... Two dogs and a cat already.
And are they in the house or on the boat?
In the house.
Yes. Okay.
And I suppose if a cat doesn't work out on the boat, I guess we just going to have another cat in the house, I suppose.
Yeah, right. Look, it's a tricky situation, Bob. Have you got any thoughts, Cheryl?
Yeah, it's just going to depend. You're going to really need a kitten or a cat that is pretty laid back. You need something that's relaxed, like a rag doll or something like that, that's not going to be stressed because, you know, there are different scenarios living on a boat for an animal than there are living in a backyard or in a house. So, finding that pet is going to be, I think, liaison with somebody that's got a pretty chilled kitten or a pretty chilled adult cat is going to be the way. And good luck on that.
There's you've really given us a curly one, Bob. There's no straight answer, but I reckon if you find the right fit, it'll be absolutely perfect.
And you'll have to give it a mariner's name. It definitely is going to need something with a bit of,
something fancy.
Something fancy.
I'd say, knowing cats, I'd have to call him Captain.
Captain.
That's a good name. Absolutely. Yep, that's a winner, Bob. Well, look, best of luck. I haven't got anything brilliant to add, I'm sorry, but I think liaising with someone who can almost vet the cat personality for you, or potentially being in a scenario, I don't know whether you can sort of take them on a trial or something and see whether it's a disaster or whether it works well.
Yeah, I do believe that most cat rescue organisations
will allow you to trial
the cat, if the cat doesn't work out after a fortnight or so. Saying, "Oh, sorry, the cat doesn't work out."
Yeah, that's a good option to trial that.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, Bob. Thank you very much.
Wishing you the best.
Call.
That's a curly one, Bob.
All the best.
Thank you so much for your advice. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Have a good day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Now, also, look, if Bob wants a cat, he can also check out our pet of the week.
We've got Vivian. Yes.
She's a beautiful black and white cat. You can do the honours, Fiona.
Actually, Bob, there you go. Check out the website. Vivian is, 14-month-old. 17-month-old black and white cat. Independent, curious, gentle, loves pats and attention. Waiting at the back door for you to arrive home. Oh, actually, maybe not. She's playful and enjoys games. Maybe not.
Don't want her jumping off the boat.
Don't play hide and seek with Vivian on the boat. I take that back. Very curious. Be prepared for a shower buddy. Actually, definitely don't get the cat.
No.
Because she likes water.
So Somebody else can get the cat. She is beautiful.
She's gorgeous. Single or multi-person home, relaxed cat, likes kids. Likes other cats, hasn't been tested with dogs, but she'll be great for someone.
She's a good one.
A good one.
And next we've got Trooper. Trooper's a cutie as well.
Trooper the Jack Russell, living up to his breed, big personality, big heart, loves cuddles, loves people, loves being active, needs secure fencing, loyal, friendly, cuddly. So he'd be a good fit. The info does say no young kids, so sort of the older kids who just can respect a pet space and how to interact them a little bit better. And he has a very strong prey drive, so no cats, no pocket pets, no birds, that sort of thing. But he'd be great for the right family.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to check out our Pets of the Week, you can head to our website at 2NURFM.com.au and you'll find the Pets of the Week under our lifestyle programs under the Cheryl Shaw and Pet Chat.
That's it.
And just announcing our winner for today for the $50 pet food voucher, it is Beck from Paterson. Thank you very much for all of your calls. We've been very busy today.
It's fantastic.
It has. Yeah. It's been great. And, we'll see you all next week.
We will.
On 2NURFM.
Thanks, Amanda.